is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are bringing back their big buy one, get one offer to help fuel your team's off-season training efforts. From now until April 30th, buy one Dr. Dish All-Star Plus shooting machine, get one All-Star Plus for $1,000. Take advantage of this offer while supplies last. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
This is Dr. Rob Bell, sports psychology coach, speaker, and author of the book, Puke and Rally. It's not about the setback, it's about the comeback. You're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, back from vacation. Jay, welcome back.
Thanks, buddy. It was a good time. I come back and there's wonkiness going on in the NBA. There's the eclipse. There's the ending of the NCAA tournaments, which I know we kind of talked a little bit before the podcast. I think, do you want to just start there? Let's just start with the NCAA and talk about that briefly. I have always been a huge fan of the first and second rounds of the NCAA tournament. And then I kind of just pick a team that I want to root for. And if that team loses, I'm more than likely either bow out or I wait and just watch the championship game. This year, I have ulterior motives in rooting for NC State. They were one of my dad's good friends went to NC State. So like I was rooting for them. And when they made their Cinderella run, that was an awesome story. But I just found myself way more captivated with the women's bracket tournament than the men's. I could name this. It's got to be the first time in the history of my life that I could name more women's basketball players in the NCAA than I could men. Like, I don't know how you feel on that, but I mean, here's the problem, Mike, with the one and done's and situation. I just feel like the women don't have the same incentive. So they stick it out. I mean, look at Paige Bueckers. She's staying for a fifth year. She could have gone in the NBA draft, the WNBA draft, and gone somewhere, but she's staying for a fifth year because she just, with the NIL and all that stuff, I'm obviously Caitlin Clark's going to be the first pick in the draft. And then just all the storylines, there seems to be just way more storylines in the women's game that were captivating and, star power. Like, you couldn't turn the TV on without seeing a Caitlin Clark commercial, whether you're watching the games, the men's games or the women's games, which, by the way, Mike, the Comcast Xfinity Caitlin Clark commercial, fantastic. Like, they just pick some random Caitlin Clark from Arizona to come and dribble a ball around and say, not all Caitlin Clarks are the same. I love that commercial. It's a fantastic commercial, but it's just way more star power. Like, who in the men's game, like, who in the men's college basketball tournament, like, other than DJ Burns and the guy from Oakland, I don't even remember his name, Gronke, like,
he's not a star. He's a guy that prior to that game, nobody had heard of him. I mean, he got
H&R Block and Buffalo Wild Wings NIL money after that. Like, that's good for him. Like, props to him. But like, other than DJ Burns, who I refer to as Escalade Light, like I don't even know who's the best player. I don't even know who the best player on the national championship team is. Do you? Like, I couldn't name
Klingon?
Him.
I don't know. Klingon?
Yeah, and now there's all this other stuff with Calipari. He's leaving, and now it sounds like Kentucky's trying to pay Dan Hurley so much money to leave UConn. Like more money than Kirby Smart's making in Georgia football. Like, I just can't buy into this. I don't know. Like, I know you and I, you know, obviously we talked to a lot of college coaches, primarily D2, D3 coaches and stuff. I'm having problems with the D1 men's basketball that it's not the same, I guess, Mike. It's just not the same.
Well, it's not the same. And I think there's a whole bunch of different things that play into it. And if you want to compare it to the women's side and start there, clearly when you look at nationally recognized quote unquote stars, the women's game with Caitlin Clark, Beckers, the whole South Carolina team, Dawn Staley, Kim Mulkey, Angel Reese, all those women have become household names in one way or another. And part of the reason why they become household names is because they've been around for more than one season in the same location on the same team. Whereas you look at the men's side, and sure, we had UConn that went back to back, but they have a couple guys back, but a lot of their team are new guys. And on the men's side, between one and dones and now the portal, you just have guys that you're like, this guy's on this team, that guy's on this team, what, this guy's on this team. And it's really, really hard to follow and become a fan of a team because the teams from year to year really don't look the same. It's like the old Jerry Seinfeld, you're kind of rooting for laundry. And college basketball was never really like that because it felt like you had guys and teams that would stick around and be together. You're like, okay, the Patrick Ewing, Georgetown Hoyas, or the Michael Jordan, James Worthy, North Carolina Tar Heels, or whatever. And now you just don't have that same amount of continuity, and you have it on the women's game. And I think when I think about the popularity of men's Division I college basketball, I think that what's missing is that recognition, and not even just of stars, but just of knowing this team or this group that played together and has fought through adversity. And Purdue was sort of like that this year to some degree, because Edie came back after they lost last year in the first round, and they come back, they make it all the way to the championship game. So in some ways, I guess Purdue represented that on a small level. But again, you're talking about Zach Edie, who, look, he was phenomenal in the NCAA tournament. But I think still a lot of times people are looking at, okay, what's this guy's pro potential? And most people out there feel like Edie, if he makes it in the NBA, which he probably will, but he's never going to be a star like some of the stars that we've seen dominate in the NCAA tournament in years past, 10, 12, 15 years ago. And so I still think that the women's game captivated people because Caitlin Clark, again, is doing something that we really haven't seen a woman's player do ever in the history of the game. And so that makes her very unique and someone that people want to see and people are interested in tuning in for. And on the men's side, you just don't have that same star power because guys aren't around or they're not in a place long enough to be able to build up the following and the interest. And people knew Iowa. People knew Caitlin Clark. People knew her teammates. People knew that team. And on the other side of it, people don't know the UConn Huskies. People didn't know the NC State Wolfpack before the tournament. People didn't know Nate Oates in Alabama. It's just a totally different game on the men's side than what it used to be. And I think that it's difficult. And look, as you get older, and you and I certainly qualify in that area as we continue to age.
Wait a second. I'm 37, Mike. I'm 37. Right,
you're older than you were 10 years ago. I'm just saying, as you get older and you have more responsibilities in your life, you have less time to be able to dedicate to being a fan of as many things as you could when you were younger. Like, you had more time.
I'm going to be honest with you, Mike. This is really, I'm going to be embarrassing myself. I'm going to embarrass myself a little bit. I have gotten back into professional wrestling a little bit, and I don't know why, because it's the dumbest thing in the world. But The Rock being back made me turn it back on again. And I watched WrestleMania on Saturday night, driving in the car over watching the second basketball game. I was more interested. I told you I was embarrassing myself. I'm okay. I'm okay with it.
All right.
But I thought
okay, that's fine.
I'm just saying, by the way, also, I'd like to Jerry Seinfeld reference. You know, Curb ended this weekend. Do you watch Curb or not?
I never watched one episode.
So the ending was fantastic. I'll tell you off the air because I don't want to spoil it for anyone that hasn't watched it yet. But okay, it was good.
Perfect.
You watched Sounds the end good. Of Seinfeld. Anyway. You watched the end of Seinfeld, right? You
yes,
saw the end.
Yes.
Okay. I'll tell you yes, at the end.
Yeah.
Remind me.
Yeah, I'm good.
Remind
okay. Me. All right. Got it. So anyway, I just think that the way that college basketball has gone on the men's side is the biggest problem is people don't recognize, know the players and the teams in the same way that they used to. And on the women's side, you do have these compelling storylines that are kind of a year by year story or a year after year story.
Well, it was like, well, there were so many different storylines going on. Like you had the LSU and Iowa thing from last year. You had in the champ, then you had, you know, you had South Carolina lost to Iowa last year. And it's like, it's a holdover. Like the only team that wasn't involved in that conversation last year was UConn, but they had their own interesting story that Paige had come back from a torn ACL. And then before Caitlin Clark, Paige was thought to be the best player that was coming in that year, right? Like if you think.
Well,
you,
and that's, yeah. And that's also, UConn also is the most historically decorated program.
11 in women's national basketball history. 11 yeah, national so, championships.
And you still have Gino Auriemma there. And it feels like the storylines that used to belong to the men this year have shifted to the women. Now, the question becomes, is Caitlin Clark a one-off phenomenon that drove that level of interest in women's basketball? Or is there a meaningful change that's happening where more people are going to tune in? I don't know the answer to that. It feels like, at least to some degree, that this whole thing was Caitlin Clark driven, and will fans come back to continue to watch women's college basketball at this level? I don't know. It seems unlikely that the women's game is going to surpass the men's game in popularity, although it did based on the TV ratings, at least this year.
Based on the gate to get into the games in Cleveland, Ohio, I think the get-in price, I think like to buy in the second market, I think the cheapest ticket you could find was like $900 or something like that. It was ridiculous. Like,
yeah, it was crazy. But I don't feel like that is necessarily sustainable.
Yeah.
I think that the bigger picture with college basketball as a whole, and you can talk about men's, women's, whatever, is I don't know where it all settles out in terms of NIL, in terms of the portal, in terms of what it's going to look like. And maybe this is kind of what it looks like, and people just have to settle into this is the new normal. Maybe there becomes something different. Maybe the NCAA adds rules. Maybe the NCAA goes away entirely. Honestly, I have no idea what's going to happen in terms of that. But I do know that college basketball, if you want to be an old timer and look back at what it was like in the 80s and the 90s, you're just never going back to that level of popularity and that level of interest to college basketball. First of all, the audience is too fractured. Secondly, you don't have the same star power and teams being around for multiple years. And that just makes it more difficult for people to connect with players and teams when they're only around each iteration of the University of North Carolina or each iteration of Duke is one season. So you look at Duke's team this year and, okay, you got a bunch of guys that are playing. Next year, you're going to bring in Cooper Flagg. And you're going to rebuild that whole team, and
for one
it's going to look nothing like it's going to look nothing like what the team's going to look like this year. Cooper Flagg, if he's as good as everybody says, he's going to be there for 1 year, and then he's going to be gone, and they're going to reload the whole other group of guys. And so, yeah, if you're a fan of Duke, you're going to follow those Duke teams, but you're not going to feel a super huge connection to Cooper Flagg the same way you felt to Christian Laettner in 1992 when he's there for 4 years and you watch him go through four NCAA tournament runs and win multiple NCAA championships. Like, it's just not, there's not going to be the iconic Leitner shot against Kentucky. Like, those moments and those connections are just gone. And I think that's what the women's game did such a great job of capturing this year, was those stories that are stories over multiple years. So that's what I think. That's where I think we are with that in terms of NCAA basketball.
Makes sense. Makes sense to me. All right. Now we're going to turn our attention to the NBA. And I don't even know what's going on. I know we were texting while I was at Disney a little off and on here that there has just been a lot of wonkiness. There's been a lot of games that, like, teams that have no business winning right now, and theoretically most years will be, like, straight up tanking. They're winning games that they don't have any business winning. Teams that are trying to get into playoff position, maybe they're intentionally losing to not be in certain playoff positions. You have the Cavs completely falling apart. You've got crazy things being said on ESPN and airs, like, I think that the Cavs should trade Donovan Mitchell for LeBron James. Did you see this one? Did you see this one?
No, who said that?
Kendrick Perkins said the Cavs should trade Donovan Mitchell for LeBron James and draft Bronny. And he
Perk
said,
and you,
and he said,
he Perk said, and you, he said, and you are in the same, you guys riding the banana boat together.
Perk said it would make both teams in a better position next season. It would put the Lakers in a better position to compete for the long term. It would put the Cavs in a better position to win immediate.
I'm not sure he's wrong necessarily in a vacuum, but that's a trade that is never going to happen. I mean, if LeBron comes to Cleveland, he's coming to Cleveland as a free agent, right? I mean, the Lakers are not trading LeBron.
Listen, Bronny's in the transfer portal. As soon as I saw that and that Ohio State was on his list, and then they hold a hogwash of him testing to see if an NBA team, that's all for show. He's going to go back to college, I think. But once I saw that Ohio State was where he was going, was contemplating going.
What if he stays in the draft, man? What if he stays in the draft?
Someone's going to take him, right?
Absolutely. Like, second round picks. I know we've talked about this before, but
where are the Cavs in the second round? That's the question I didn't know.
I don't think they have a second round pick.
Do we have any pick this draft?
I think this year we have our own first because. Oh. Well, this is the last year.
We're taking
the last year before
doing
Mitchell.
We're doing it. We're taking him.
You can't take him in a first round, but
no, you take him. You hope that LeBron comes back. Come on, Mike. This is the,
okay.
It would be the dumbest thing. Okay. Listen, it would be so stupid.
What would be the dumbest thing, to take him or to not take him?
To not take him. Come on. You drafted his dad. Listen, let's be honest, Mike. The only way the Cavs, this current roster construction, there's no way. This team had a 26-point lead against the Clippers and choked it away. And they scored, did they score 80 points in the first half?
80 in the first half, 38 in the second half against the Clippers. And then against the Lakers, they took.
Jamie Bickerstaff makes no halftime adjustments. Tyronn Lue, Mr. This is what Tyronn Lue does all game. For those audio listeners, I'm just doing the wide mouth wide open like he's catching flies. He makes halftime adjustments, and JB Bickerstaff is too concerned about yelling at the referees again. I saw a really good meme. It was like split in half. Tyronn Lue drawing up second half adjustments. And then a picture of Baby Big Staff pointing his finger and yelling at the referee. This is his halftime adjustment. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. And I don't, like, listen, there is no world. I would sign up for this right now, Mike. I would fire JB Bickerstaff with 3 games left and let Luke Walton coach the team for the rest of the season. Do it. I have no faith in JB Bickerstaff.
Okay.
Luke Walton, you coach prefer, the team.
The fact that you prefer Luke Walton to JB Bickerstaff is probably it's probably not a ringing endorsement of JB Bickerstaff. I'll just leave it there. Look, you and I have talked. Do you think, Mike, honestly,
the Cavs are in a better place with JB Bickerstaff as their head coach, or if they fired him and brought Luke and said Luke Walton run the team for the playoffs? Who do you have more confidence in, Mike?
I think I probably have more confidence in Luke Walton.
Done. I'm done.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. So he's out. Let's just talk.
Bickerstaff's gone. Sorry, JJ Outlaw, former guest of the pod. I'm sorry.
I know the Cavs didn't play tonight. So the plan for the podcast was to go through tonight's games and just talk about that. But since we're jumping right into the Cavs, this team is a complete and utter mess. And it's a complete and utter mess, not only as a collective group, but individually, when you look at what is going on with this team. And let's start with Donovan Mitchell. So I know he's hurt, and you can't really place any blame on him for being injured. And so I look at Donovan, and we've obviously jumped back and forth throughout this season of, I think I raised the fact that they should trade him. That was back like in October, maybe November, that I said the Cavs should look into trading Donovan Mitchell. And then there was all kinds of talk that maybe that's what they would do, especially after Garland and Mobley got hurt, and then they went on the big run. And then you hear all different sorts of things about whether or not Donovan Mitchell is going to re-sign with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And
whoa, baby.
I don't think...
You hear that, Mike?
I don't think anyone... What?
The thunder?
I heard some thunder. Yeah, I'm hearing some thunder. Not Oklahoma City thunder, but thunder, our weather here in Cleveland. Anyway, Donovan Mitchell, I have no idea what he's going to do and whether or not he's going to sign an extension with the Cleveland Cavaliers, but I do know that until he makes that decision or until he informs the Cavaliers of what that decision will be, the Cavs are kind of in a little bit of limbo. And
it's like 2011, 2010 all over again.
Well, it's obvious at this point that this roster, the way it is, you're not maximizing the players that you have, or maybe the players that you have been overrated by us local fans when it comes to who they are and what they are. I think Mitchell is what he is. I think Mitchell is a notch below a guy who can lead you to an NBA championship. I think he's probably good enough to be your second best player, which if you go back to when we made this trade, this is what we kept saying at the time, that the Cavs believed that Evan Mobley was going to eventually be their best player. And through three seasons, there is little evidence that Evan Mobley is going to be able to become the best player on a championship team. I don't think that we've seen, there's nothing that we've seen from him offensively that would lead me to believe that he is ever going to be the number one driver.
You're further strengthening my point that we need to bring LeBron back, Mike. Listen, if you swapped LeBron for Donovan Mitchell, LeBron's the best player on our team, right?
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
LeBron, but the question becomes, if you get rid of Donovan Mitchell, then you're looking at, you have Evan Mobley, who, look, defensively, phenomenal. Offensively, limited, and he's maybe gotten a little bit better as a passer. He's maybe gotten a teeny tiny bit better putting the ball on the floor and not having to get poked away from him every single time he tries to dribble into traffic. But other than that, I would say there's nothing that he's better than when he was a rookie. There's no skill. He's not a better shooter. He's not better in the post. I don't think he's stronger. I just don't see anything that leads me to believe that he's going to be the number one guy on a championship team. Now, he's still very, very good, and he's very, very valuable. And he's a good player. He's going to play in the league for a long time. He's going to be a guy that helps you to win games, but he's not your best player. And when the Cavs made the Donovan Mitchell trade, I think if you injected him with truth serum, they would have said that we're making this trade because we think Donovan Mitchell could be our 1B to Evan Mobley's 1A when we're ready to win a championship. And maybe they thought that was his third year. Maybe they thought it was his fourth year. But they miscalculated Evan Mobley's growth trajectory. Maybe Mobley gets there. Doesn't look like he's going to. But if he gets there, it's not going to be on the same timeline that the Cavaliers thought. So that's Evan Mobley. Let's put him aside. Darius Garland has been horrendous this season. Horrendous. He has so many terrible turnovers in big moments. And turnovers where he's just dribbling the ball and all of a sudden he's dribbling it off his foot. Or he's going into traffic and all of a sudden he's just throwing the ball right to the other team. And it seems like it's in big moments, in crushing moments. I don't mean necessarily like last play of the game turnovers. I'm talking about there's 4 minutes to go. Cavs are up two. They need a basket. Boom. Garland turns it over and all of a sudden the other team goes on a 4-0 run and it totally shifts the momentum. He's had so many of those plays. And I think about our dialogue back and forth on Garland. When he was a rookie, you and I talked about it all the time that he missed so many shots, turned the ball over. He looked like a guy who was completely lost. Then he figured it out in his second year, his third year, really started to get things going. And now this year, it feels like he's regressed. Is that because of the injuries and he just never got a rhythm this year? Is it because him and Donovan Mitchell just don't mesh and fit together? And I think at this point, we kind of can figure out that they don't. I mean, I think they could play together, but they're not amplifying one another's strengths. They're not making each other better. And so if you're the Cavs, you have to look at it and go, well, what are we doing with our four best players? When really, as we've talked about so many times, Mitchell and Garland don't make each other better. Jared Allen and Mobley, maybe if they were playing in 1996, might have made each other better, because I do think they have some good interior passing. But you can't play two guys who are 7 feet tall who can't or won't shoot the ball outside of 15 feet. You just can't play those two guys together. So now you have your four best players that really don't make sense together. And I know we've said this time after time after time after time, but this team has a decision to make. Now, if you want to bring in LeBron as a free agent and slot him in there and think that that's the conduit that makes all this work, is that possible? Sure, LeBron's a basketball genius. Maybe he figures out how to get all these guys on the same page and playing together. I think the likelihood of that is less than 5%. If it were to happen, it would be incredible. It would be amazing. He'd be a great fit next to all these guys. I think it's much more likely that two out of those four guys get traded away and you try to rebuild your team. And if you're the Cavs, you have to look at it and go, Garland and Mobley, Mobley's 22, Garland's what, 23, maybe 24. Those guys are still young enough that if you can rebuild the draft haul that you gave away for Donovan Mitchell, maybe it makes sense to see what you can get for Donovan, see what you can get for Jared Allen, and just kind of reset around Garland and Mobley as your core, and then you try to add around that, because it just doesn't feel like this team is going to get it done. And the Cavs made a bet on Mitchell, and they indirectly made a bet on Evan Mobley, and it hasn't happened. And then you look across in the Western Conference, right? Another team that made a trade with the Utah Jazz for, I don't know, arguably a player on probably the same level. Obviously, completely different type of player, but Rudy Gobert defensively and what he was, they made that trade with the idea that Anthony Edwards is going to be ready. And Anthony Edwards poured in 51 tonight, and he's probably going to be second team all NBA. And Evan Mobley is still trying to scratch around and figure things out. And the reason why Minnesota has a decent chance to finish first in the Western Conference, yeah, Rudy Gobert has been a big part of it. But if Anthony Edwards was playing at the level that Evan Mobley is playing at, I guarantee you Minnesota is not sniffing around the one seed. And that's the difference in those two trades. Like, I think you can argue the merits of either one of them, whether they were good trades, bad trades, whatever. But the fact is, the Wolves bet on Anthony Edwards to become a star, and he did. And the Cavs bet on Evan Mobley to become a star, and he didn't. And that's kind of where we're at on that. So the Cavs are just, it's maddening to watch them right now. It's maddening. I will not be shocked at all if they lose these next three games at home based on the way that they've played. I also wouldn't be shocked if somehow they turn around and win all three of these games. I have no idea. This Eastern Conference playoff race, I have no idea what's going to happen other than the fact that Boston should steamroll through these playoffs and be the Eastern Conference representative in the finals. There's no way Boston should not be challenged at all. I mean, they have a 15-game lead,
Mike,
in the conference.
The lead between them and the number two seed Milwaukee is bigger than the difference between the 1 and the 10 seed in the West.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Listen,
the Cavs,
listen, can you
the
just,
Cavs' performance lately
just,
has been ridiculous.
Just, as an aside to that statement.
Okay.
Boston losing the playoffs would make Bill Simmons' podcast the most glorious podcast. True or false, Mike?
Absolutely true. Nothing would make me happier. Nothing would make me happier than Philadelphia losing whatever. Right now, Philadelphia is a half game up
you
on
see
Miami.
He tweaked his knee today?
Embiid?
Yeah.
He still had 37-11 in
the
like,
went and played.
Whatever,
he quit and kept playing, but he seemingly tweaked it at the end of the third quarter. And then going along with that, the whole Giannis situation, they're saying it's a calf strain, but they've already scheduled an MRI tomorrow, Mike.
Dumbest part of this whole thing. From the Cavs' perspective, the dumbest part of this whole thing is you look at last season. You lose to the Knicks. Sitting there in the next round was the 8th-seeded Miami Heat. You didn't take advantage of that. Now you look at this year, and look, all these teams in the Eastern Conference stink. Either they just stink because they stink or because they have injuries to key players or they're too young or whatever it might be. And it's a golden opportunity for any one of the other 7 teams other than the Celtics to make a run to the conference finals. And you could say what you want. It's a weak Eastern Conference, blah, blah, blah. If you could tell any one of these fan bases that your team's going to make a run to the Eastern Conference playoffs, other than maybe Milwaukee, I think every other fan base probably would take it. Maybe not Miami, but certainly the Knicks, Orlando, Cavs, Indiana, even the Sixers would probably take a trip to the Eastern Conference finals and be fairly happy with it. And the path is right there for any of these teams. And it's right there for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I just don't see it happening. Hey, coaches. Today, let's talk about Integrity Insight, a mini course crafted for coaches focused on team conduct and values from our friends at Teams of Men. Why Integrity Insight? This course is a journey into your team's climate and culture. You'll reflect on past incidents, assess your team's communication, and plan for a future where integrity is at the core of decision-making, on and off the court. Integrity Insight comes with practical guides and digital tools for effective planning and collaboration. The goal? To empower you to lead a team where ethical conduct and character growth are paramount. This course is about transforming your team culture, embedding values and ethics in every aspect. Ready to dive deeper into team integrity? Email us at teamsofmen@gmail.com with the subject Integrity Deep Dive to get started.
Let's just look at the Eastern Conference. And I know we were going to do this we'll talk about the NBA totals here in a minute, our picks from the beginning of the year. Obviously, Boston's number one. They've clinched it. I think they've pretty much, they've clinched the best record in the NBA, right?
Easily.
So my next question, okay, where is everyone else going to fall? In the this, like, we are all grouped together, like, two theoretically. Okay, so Philly cannot catch Milwaukee, but 2 through 6 are fluid, like, theoretically. Now, I still think Milwaukee is probably going to end up at the 2, but that loss their loss to the Knicks the other night hurts them, okay. But right now we've got Milwaukee at 48-31. They've got 3 games left. We got the Knicks at 47-32. They got, I think every team has three games left except for the Pacers, who only have two games left. Okay. In the Eastern Conference. And Philly only has two games left. So, like, where do these teams end up? I think Milwaukee probably still ends the two seed. I'm hoping that all is holy and that the Knicks stay at the three seed. If we're not going to jump up that high and we play Orlando in the first round, I would feel okay about that series, Mike. I just feel like, you know,
you don't want to play the Knicks. I think Brunson would destroy the Cavs. I think he would single-handedly
He had a great game tonight, Mike. He had a great game tonight again.
He would single-handedly destroy the Cavs. I'm deathly afraid of Jalen Brunson. So I would want to avoid the Knicks at all costs. And yet I can see very easily where it's going to be the Knicks at three and the Cavs at six. I can see it.
Yeah. Well, listen, I think the Cavs should win. Should win two, if not all three of these games remaining. You got Memphis tomorrow night. Memphis is literally playing for nothing other than pride. All right. So you better come out tomorrow. I'm going to the game. They better come out tomorrow and handle the business. Then they play Indiana on Friday, and then they play the Charlotte Hornets on Sunday. Right? Sunday. Yes, Sunday. You've just got to win.
Let me ask you this. If you had your druthers and you could put yourself in any seed that you could realistically get to, the Cavs are not going to catch Milwaukee. I mean, it's possible, I guess, that Milwaukee can lose their last three games and the Cavs could somehow overtake them.
They don't have to lose three. They only have to lose two.
Cavs have the tiebreaker?
Yes, they have the tiebreaker because they have the conference. Remember we talked about this 2 weeks ago. I know this is seems like ages because Milwaukee got screwed and played an extra game, and we have a better division record.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So the Cavs, to me, if you're the Cavs, right? See, I'm still looking at this going, okay, how could we make a run to the Eastern Conference Finals? Because again, all these teams, other than the Celtics, I mean, who knows? So I think you want to be in the two, the three, or the six is where you want to finish. You want to finish two, three, or six. You don't want to finish four or five. So the ideal spot to finish would be to finish third.
And the Knicks to finish fourth?
Correct. And draw the Pacers, or I guess Orlando, in the 3-6. That's the ideal spot for the Cavs. Because now, if you get to two, now you're probably looking at Philadelphia or Miami, which I'm not super excited as much as I've railed on Joel Embiid's poor playoff performances. I'm not sure I want to see him at this point in the first round. And Miami, I don't think Miami's very good, but Miami has a playoff history that, based on the Cavs' performance in the playoffs last year against the Knicks, I'm not sure how much intestinal fortitude I want to test with the Cavs in the first round going up against Miami. So to me, the ideal thing that could happen would be Cavs get the three, you play Indiana, you beat Indiana. Now you're looking at whatever, a Milwaukee potentially in the second round, where who knows if Giannis is healthy, who knows what's going on with that team. They just have been, as much as the Cavs have been a mess, if you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan, you have to be just looking around going, what in the world is happening with our team? Every time I look at the box score, Giannis is doing his thing and everybody else is just, I mean, and beyond their big four, when those guys play, they've still been pretty good. But beyond the Lopez, Giannis, Dame, and Middleton group, they have next to nothing. I guess Portis has been okay, but they're just, Milwaukee's just, I have no idea what's going on with that team. I wouldn't feel horrible if the Cavs somehow make it through the first round and Milwaukee's sitting there. I'd be okay. So I guess my point is I want to avoid the 4-5 if possible.
And we could totally see, you could totally see Milwaukee losing to Philly in the first round, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then we're drawing Philly at home. Like that would be great. I mean, for us, I feel okay about that in this second round, right? I feel great about that. Like we get the,
I guess
home
if
court.
You went, if you went, if you went around,
you went around, you have home court in the second, you would have home court in the second round. And then maybe Miami's knocked off Boston. Cause you just know that that stupid things might can happen. Like,
how do you feel about the Cavs getting swept by the Pacers in the first round?
I don't think that would happen. I don't think that would happen. And I don't know, man.
You could tell me anything at this point. Honestly tell me that the Cavs fall to the play-in, they lose to the Heat in the first play-in game, and then boom, they come in and Trae Young's back and he scores 56 and they lose to the Hawks in the second play-in game. Nothing at this point with this team would surprise me. At the same time, like I said earlier, they could win three games, somehow get to the 2 seed and make a run to the Eastern Conference Finals. I just don't, this team is maddening. It's maddening to watch. It's just, they are so frustrating because you have no idea from night to night, quarter to quarter, half to half, what you're getting from the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yep. I agree. All right. We spent a lot of time on the Cavs.
A lot of time. We talked around the rest of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. So just to put a bow on to talk about the NBA totals draft, Mike, the beginning of the season, Mike and I drafted these teams and we've given periodical updates. Right now with, you know, I don't know, most teams having 3 games left, my total points is 739. Mike's total points is 710. It ain't happened for
you. So it's pretty much over. The Memphis Grizzlies, I would say, sank my chances.
So Memphis having 27 wins, and my bad one, that combined with your Hawks wins and your Pacers losses hurt you big time because all those are in their 20s to the 30s. I only have one in the 30s. I only have the Magic losses.
If I flip the Hawks and Pacers and I had the Hawks losses and the Pacers wins, I'd probably be in pretty good shape. But unfortunately,
if it's some bunch of candy and nuts, it'd be Christmas every day.
I understand. That's not the way it works. So I get it. So it looks like I'm gonna. Is this our pizza bet?
Well, that was one. We had a pizza bet for that, and then we had a pizza bet for Zion. So we might just have to wash our hands clean of it.
Zion's not getting to 250 this year, so I might have to pay you out this year, and then whenever he gets to 250, which will be sometime
next year,
it'll be sometime. He's gonna get to 250. I feel pretty confident that he's gonna get to 250. I don't know when, but he's gonna get there. He's gonna get there in his career. So look, let's put a bow on the Eastern Conference. Why don't you just tell us? How do you think the seeding is going to play out? And then I'll tell you how I think
we'll move to the West. I'm going to take care of the hard one first. Boston's going to be first. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to go Boston. I'm going to go Milwaukee. Who do the Knicks? I want to see what the Knicks schedule is. I got to look at this really quickly here. Hold on. I want to see here.
Knicks have Bulls, Nets, Celtics.
And the Celtics aren't playing for anything. Okay. Correct. So those are 3 wins. So I'm going to go, oh, man. Actually, I'm changing that. I'm scrapping that, Mike. I'm going to say Boston. I'm going to say the Knicks are going to end in the 2 seed.
Wow. Wow.
Knicks are the 2 seed. I'm going to go Milwaukee in the 3 seed. I think we're going to end in the 4 seed. Orlando's going to end in the 5 seed, and Indiana's going to end in the 6 seed. That's what I'm going to go with. So us in Orlando are going to flip-flop. Milwaukee and the Knicks are going to flip flop because Milwaukee has games left, right? They have. They play The NBA
play the Magic twice and the Thunder.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They got games left. And Giannis is in doubt. Like Milwaukee could easily lose all three of those games. I mean, which wouldn't actually be good for us with Orlando. We kind of need them to split with Orlando, don't we? And Orlando plays Milwaukee twice, and who's Orlando play? Who's the other game?
They have another good game. They have another losable game. Let me look here. Orlando has the Sixers.
Oh God, man, NBA schedulers did a good job this year. Like the Cavs have a bunch of garbage left. Really, I mean, the Pacers game is theoretically a good one. Could be it. I'm going to go with Boston 1, New York 2, Milwaukee 3, Cleveland 4, Orlando 5, Indiana 6. And then I think Philly will come out of the play-in. And Miami will come out of the play-in. Although I'm kind of talking myself into maybe Philadelphia jumping Indiana. If Embiid's okay, like that's totally on the cards too. You know.
There's so many crazy possibilities. All right, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to go with Boston stays at 1. Milwaukee's going to stay at 2. The Knicks are going to stay at 3.
You got to say the Cavs are at 4 then.
The Cavs are going to end at 4.
Because if you're leaving Milwaukee at 2, you're assuming they're beating the Magic.
Yes. Bucks, Knicks, Cavs, Pacers, Sixers.
You think the Magic are going to fall into the play-in?
Yes. Orlando's not going to win another game because they're going to lose twice to Milwaukee.
But if Giannis is a play, they're not going to lose both those games. I mean, Milwaukee's going to be smart. If Giannis is even
I get it, but Milwaukee wants to win those games. Milwaukee can't afford. If you're the Bucks,
they're playing tomorrow. And they're playing the game tomorrow. There's no way Giannis is playing tomorrow.
That's fine, but listen to my – I don't even care if he plays. Listen to my logic. And look, the Bucks have been terrible. So could they lose to the Orlando Magic? Absolutely. But here's what I'm saying to you. Milwaukee wants to stay away from Boston in the second round. If they were to lose one or both of those Orlando Magic games, there is a decent chance that they could fall – to 4. If they lose one or both of those, if they lose both of them, there's a real good chance they're going to fall at least to 4.
Yeah.
They probably can't fall all the way to 6. So you're looking at, they could be a 4 or 5 if they lose both of those games to the Magic. So they're going to be motivated to try to win because they want to avoid, if you're Milwaukee, you still feel like you have a chance to win an NBA championship. You may be completely delusional in that thought, but if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, you came into the season thinking you were a championship contender, and despite all the problems you can point to, and it's been done in numerous articles and podcasts, that when their 4 best guys are on the floor, they're like plus 16 per 100 possessions. So if you're Milwaukee, you can still say to yourself, if we can get healthy at the right time, we can still win an NBA championship. You don't want to have to do that going through the Boston Celtics in the second round. You do not want to see Boston in the second round. So they're going to do what they can to try to remain in that 2-3 range, which means they have to win those games, which means they're going to be playing hard in those games. Now, could Orlando still beat them? Absolutely. But I think Milwaukee takes care of business and wins those games. And I think Orlando doesn't win another game. And I think they fall into the play-in. Philly moves up to number 6. So then you have Milwaukee at 2, the Knicks at 3, the Cavs at 4, the Pacers at 5, the Magic at 6, I'm sorry, the Sixers at 6, the Magic at 7 and the Heat at 8. That's how I think it's going to fall out, which is crazy. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Well, we're just going to have to wait and see it. And we'll, when we record next week, we'll know, right? We'll know who's playing in the play-in games, I guess.
Correct.
All right, coaches, listen up. It's time to kick this season up a notch and give your team the competitive edge they deserve with Game Changer. Game Changer is the ultimate tool for coaches, with features designed to help take your team to the next level. It's time to take this season to new heights. Download Game Changer for free on iOS or Android to start getting valuable stats and video your team can build on. Get the ultimate coach's tool today by downloading Game Changer. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads.
All right, Western Conference. How long have we been going now? I don't even have that screen pulled
up.
We're
at 48 minutes, Mike, so we kind of probably need to... We're going to expedite this. 12 minutes on the Western Conference.
Let me start at the top of the Western Conference just by reiterating my point again that the fact that Minnesota has remained at the top of the Western Conference without Karl Anthony Towns is a testament to just how good Anthony Edwards has been this year, and points out the stark contrast between the bet that Minnesota made on him and the bet that the Cavs made on Evan Mobley. Yeah. I think you can safely say, and we were saying it in the summer with Team USA, that Anthony Edwards has clearly taken the leap to, he's probably not good enough right now at his age to be the best player on a championship team, but he is getting there. And he's going to get there. I think there's no doubt that in the next 5 years, Anthony Edwards ascends into top five player in the league, guy who is on a short list of dudes who can be your best player, who can win you an NBA championship. I think this year, now look, they might fall flat on their face in the playoffs and maybe he doesn't play well. It's certainly possible they could lose a first round series, even if they're the number one seed. But at age 22, what Anthony Edwards is doing and what he's capable of athletically, he's coming. He's coming for a top five spot in the NBA. So kudos to Ant and the Timberwolves for continuing to remain at the top of the Western Conference, despite the fact that Towns has been out. And there's some reports out today that Towns is playing 5-on-5 and full contact, and that he's going to be ready to return soon. He may even play in the last regular season game or two is what I heard. So who knows? But he certainly looks like he's going to be back for their first round playoff series, which, look, you can say what you want about Karl Anthony Towns, but clearly it's nice to have him in your lineup if you can.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, and the fact that you already touched on the Rudy Gobert piece of things, like he's playing really, really well. And they just have guys that seemingly, whereas the Cavs don't seemingly fit together, they just fit together. Just, it works. I mean, Conley comes in and has his role. You know, Edwards obviously has his role. Karl Anthony Towns when he's healthy. And it's just seemingly a pretty good fit for the team. So,
And it works really well on the defensive end of the floor, right? I mean, that team's huge and they fit together beautifully on the defensive end of the floor. Yeah, offensively, yeah. It's not quite. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, for sure. And then continuing in the Western Conference, Mike, we've got, you know, you got Denver, which we've said so much about Denver. Jokic just continues to be amazing, and just do crazy things. Okay, but then you look at the next four teams. Okay, you got Oklahoma City, super young. They've played really well. You've got the Clippers, who one day they look great. The next day they look terrible, and then they look great again. Tonight, up 35-4 in the first quarter. I don't know what the score is currently.
It was just down to 9 a second
it's
ago. 11, two
it's
11.
It's 101-90 now. Okay. It's just you can't predict what's going to happen in the West Conference. You got Dallas. You got Luka and Kyrie playing really, really well. You've got, you know, Phoenix, once again, not knowing what they're doing. You got the Pelicans, who were losing to Blazers for most of the night. They ended up winning the game. You got Sacramento. Sabonis, you see his double-double streak got broken tonight, Mike. He only had 8 points. He only had 8 points tonight. And then you've got Lakers and Golden State who, you know, Houston's out now, so they're just all jockeying for position in the play-in tournament at this point.
Big loss for the Lakers tonight to the Warriors because they could have passed Sacramento with Sacramento's loss. Now they're still going to be a half game behind the Sacramento Kings tonight.
Yeah, and Lakers only the Lakers only have two games left. Who do they play left? They play on Friday and they play on Saturday. The Lakers play the Grizzlies. That should be a win. And the Pelicans. Ooh, that's gonna be a huge game. That Sunday game is a huge game. I mean, that's huge. Sacramento? Who does Sacramento play left? Second place,
I'm looking
the
right
Blazers
now.
On Sunday. They play the Rockets on Friday. Oh, my God. Sacramento. The schedule gods helped out Sacramento. And they play the Pelicans on Thursday. I mean, so Sacramento should go 2-1 for sure, right? I mean.
Well, no, they have Phoenix. They have the Pelicans, the Suns, and the Trailblazers. But they're all home. All those games are home. All the Kings games are home. Pelicans, Suns, Blazers.
Okay. Oh, the Blazers play the Rockets. Yeah. All those games are home. Yeah. They were the 2 seed last year, right, Mike?
Were they the two? I think they were the three. I believe they were the three. I think they were the three because Memphis was the two. Memphis was two.
Okay.
Sacramento was three. So there's. Look, we talked about in the Eastern Conference, there's a million different ways that this thing could end up. And I don't even know what to say about the Western Conference either, other than, okay, so the top three are going to be the top three in some order. We don't really know. I guess the biggest question I have with the top three is, even though Denver hasn't run away with the Western Conference, the same way Boston has run away with the Eastern Conference, if Denver is healthy, is there any team that you can see legitimately challenging and beating Denver in a series? To me, Oklahoma City and Minnesota are both too young without enough playoff experience to say that they're going to beat a seasoned, healthy NBA championship with the best player in the league on your team. I don't see either one of those teams. The Clippers are a fraud. Kawhi's out right now. Harden's been terrible. Anyone thinking that there's going to be a Harden rejuvenation in the playoffs, we don't even have to go into that. To me, I think the only team that legitimately would have a chance to beat Denver is the Mavericks. And that would be on the back of Luka averaging like a 38, 15, and 10, and Kyrie averaging doing a 2016 Cavs impression where he has a series against Denver where he averages 28 a game and shoots 58% from the floor. That's the only team, and I think it's very unlikely, but to me, that's the only team that I could legitimately see beating the Denver Nuggets. I don't see anybody else in that Western Conference beating the Nuggets.
You're saying the Lakers don't have a chance, Mike?
No, the Lakers do not have a chance. The Lakers do not have a chance. So that's what I think about the top three. I think Denver is clearly the best team. And then in the middle rounds, I don't believe in the Clippers at all. If it ends up being, which it looks like it's pretty locked in, Clippers-Mavericks in the first round, there's not a chance that I'll be taking the LA Clippers in that series. I think Dallas is clearly, to me, the favorite. Especially, look, who knows what you're getting from Kawhi. We already know what you're getting from James Harden. There's no way the Clippers are beating Dallas. And then Phoenix comes in tonight and an important game at home against those same Clippers, and they're down 33 at halftime. They get their score doubled up. It's ridiculous. And all three of their big, whatever, their quote unquote big three all played tonight. I mean, kudos to Phoenix because they've had that last 10 game stretch where they're playing basically all playoff teams. They've gone 7-3 in their last 10, and they still got a few more tough games left. But they've weathered that storm, I think, better than I certainly thought. I thought they were for sure destined for the play-in. And then New Orleans hit a skid where they lost four. I think they lost four in a row, and now they'll have won. I believe they'll have won two in a row after did that game end tonight against Portland already. But
yeah.
So Portland's going to move ahead, or I'm sorry, the Pelicans are going to move ahead of Phoenix back up into the six slot, which is kind of how I anticipate it's going to go. Sacramento and the Lakers. I don't really know what to think of that. Although now, I guess Golden State will only be a half game behind the Lakers. So those three, Kings, Lakers, Warriors, I have no idea how that's going to finish itself out. And Phoenix, look, the Western Conference is just, I mean, it's a mess. It is a mess. I talked with Pop last week about my number one guy, most intriguing player that I was looking forward to seeing in the playoffs is Zion. I just want to see what is playoff Zion look like? What does it look like when a team, when they can game plan for trying to get him looks, opportunities against one team? How can you unleash Zion? And conversely, how can other teams attack him defensively, and what can they do against him in the playoffs? And when the spotlight is shining, what's he going to do? And to me, I will watch probably every second of whatever series New Orleans ends up playing in. If they get in and they avoid the play-in and don't get knocked out in the play-in round, whatever series New Orleans plays in, I will be watching that series in its entirety just to see what Zion's going to do. So,
all right,
you want to predict the order?
Oh, sure, I'll give it a shot.
Since we did it for the East, we can wrap it up there.
All right, so I'm going to go for the West. I'm going to say. Okay, so I'm going to say Denver's going to end up one. I'm going to go Denver one, Minnesota two. I'm going to say Oklahoma City three. Those three, they have to be one, two, and three. No one can catch them.
I agree with you in that order. I'm going with the same thing.
Okay. And then I'm going to go Dallas at the four. Although they're going to be two games behind because the Clippers game isn't over yet. I'm going to go Clippers at the four, Dallas at the five. I'm going to go status quo, Mike. I think it's going to stay the same. Other than from four through seven, I think it's going to stay the same. 8, 9, 10 is a little bit more fluid, but four through seven, really three through seven is going to stay the same. That's where I'm going with.
Okay. Put those last three teams in order.
Sacramento has two tough games left. What do the Lakers have left? They have two games left, right? We said that already.
Yes.
I'm going to say Memphis.
It's impossible, man.
I'm just going to say status quo, 4 through 10. No one's changing.
All right, 4 through no one's changing. All right. I'm going to go Clippers stay at 4. Dallas stays at 5. New Orleans goes to 6. Phoenix falls to 7.
They're in seventh. NBA.com, NBA app has them at seven already. I was going based on what the NBA app, because they updated as soon as the games are over. So I have the Clippers at four, Dallas at five, Pelicans at six, Phoenix at seven, Sacramento at eight, Lakers at nine, Golden State at 10. That's what I have.
Right. I'm going to say that the Lakers jump Sacramento. So Lakers end up at 8, Sacramento ends up at 9, and the Warriors end up at 10. That's how I'm going to go with.
Okay.
But the honest truth is Golden State could lead both of those teams. If Golden State ends up in 8, that would be insane. And you had Sacramento against the Lakers in the 9-10. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think the Lakers get to 8. Sacramento's the 9. Golden State's the 10. It's going to be a wacky and crazy last week. This is about as crazy as I can remember.
Yeah.
In terms of having no idea really at any of these spots. I mean, I think the only real matchup that's locked in is the Clippers and Mavericks, because there's still a possibility maybe they flip-flop, but I think that's the only real matchup that is set. Everything else in both conferences could look completely different two nights from now than what it looks at this moment. So it is going to be a fun last week of the NBA season to see how this thing all turns out.
I want to propose something to you, and you got to...
Okay.
My proposition is that we record next week on Monday, because there is no play-in game. There's no games on Monday, and we'll be able to talk about the playing games, talk about the seedings, and then probably, you know, after our we record the interviews on Wednesday now, then maybe on, I don't know, then coming back before the actual playoffs start
to do a little playoff preview. That makes sense to me.
Okay, so that makes sense. We'll shoot for Monday then. We'll come back Monday with it. Either Sunday night or Monday night, we'll record an episode and it'll go out before Tuesday. Let's just do that.
Sounds like a plan. That. Perfect.
We'll see what the tea leaves are saying, Mike.
That's what. Well, if the tea leaves cooperate, we can maybe get that done. All right. On that note, thanks for checking out tonight's NBA episode of the Hoopheads podcast. We appreciate you being a part of our audience, and to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Head Start Basketball.